Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about Hidden Traitor games. We'll take a look at how adding a little mistrust changes how we approach a game. But as always, first we go off topic for some news announcements and feedback.
All right, so I'm back from Brazil.
Woo.
I met some really cool people down there. Our Brazilian audience should skyrocket at this point.
Oh, so,
I do want to make a shout out to Jean, okay. Who's really into Portuguese board games now, but there aren't really that many Portuguese board games.
Uh-huh.
So he has to import games from the US
right. That
are translated into Portuguese.
They've
already been translated. So there's a website that will translate into Portuguese certain games.
Wow.
But other games, he has to like import them from the US. And it's not just the shipping. It is also just like a crazy tariff to bring these games.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
no, like free trade between the Brazil
no free
and
the trade. No, NAFTA is not part
Haven't
of.
Haven't you been paying attention to the election? Free trade is terrible, Josh.
I've been paying attention. I just don't know which agreements you have with which countries.
Yeah. No, all bad. All trading is bad trading.
So
that's the reason why we're not getting board games in Brazil. I told him next time I'd come down there, I'd pack a few good games.
Yeah.
So he's trying to get Mechs versus Minions, but not only do you have to order that, have it shipped to a US address, then you have to try to get that box, which is about 20 pounds, to Brazil with taxes involved. It's a big mess. So, and apparently there's Fabio down there. He's the DM, the office DM.
Oh, cool.
So they have a Tuesday Dungeons & Dragons games just like in Chicago.
Nice.
So, and actually the whole crew down there is amazing. Like I immensely enjoyed spending the week down there. Very sleep deprived.
Right.
I haven't slept a full night's sleep in about 48 hours or so.
Is it kind of like sort of the Mediterranean countries? Is it similar, like they have this really late evening culture where they just keep going and going? Is that how it is?
It was for us.
Right.
But I'm not sure if that's different because that's just kind of my company culture anyway. So, yeah.
Hard to tell if it was a Brazilian thing or this company thing.
Yeah. Although I did do some interviews with them and it seems to be a pretty trendy thing where it's like, what do you enjoy doing? I enjoy going out with my friends and coming in late to work in the morning.
Right.
So, yeah. Otherwise, it's a lot like the US. It's a similar in size. It's similar in culture.
Uh-huh.
You know, they have northern Brazil is different than southern Brazil and culture and, you know, food and all of this.
Right.
So it was really, really cool.
They've just got a bigger rainforest than you do here.
They have a bigger rainforest. We do have a rainforest.
I've heard about this.
It's just a little one.
Okay. Where is that one?
Northwest.
Okay.
Yep.
Good to know.
So
it's where our sparkling vampires live.
Where the sparkling vampires live.
I want to see those guys.
Which is like Seattle area, right? Like
Oregon, I think.
Yeah, somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. Northwest.
Well, northwest somewhere.
The Pacific Northwest.
Ooh.
Yep. So, and I'm going to GameCon. Let's see, I got back from Brazil this morning. I'm going to GameCon Thursday, or Game Hole Con Thursday.
Right.
So I really have to finish those pre-made characters.
Right.
I think that's it for... Oh, wait. No, there is one more thing.
What?
We did something with our logo.
Oh, yeah. What did we do with the logo,
Chris? What did I do to the logo?
I don't know. I guess we got a third person.
There was something
person.
Weird about it for a while.
Kitty is now in the logo.
I'm in the logo. It's awesome. So exciting.
All three.
Yep. So
that's exactly what I look like in real life.
Exactly. I think we all look a little bit better in the logo except for Josh.
Yeah.
Josh just...
He's just too good looking in real life.
That's not even a drawing of him. We just took that picture
clearly,
and put it...
I can hear the sarcasm through the radio.
Yep, so it's... no, but that new logo will go out on this one, and I'm going to retroactively change it on all of the earlier podcasts that Kitty's in.
Yay.
So episode 4 on, we'll have the right logo.
Yay!
I was going to bring up, I don't know, how about them Cubs, you know? Now, is that worth bringing up on a game? I mean, it's a game after all.
It is a game after all, so...
And we're living in Chicago.
Really a tabletop game.
It's not, but it's news and announcements, because...
It does count, yeah.
It is worth mentioning, so yeah, we are recording in Chicago. For those people who don't follow it, I promise not more than 60 seconds. First time in 71 years, the Cubs made it to the World Series. Currently, the series is best of 7. They're 3-2,
down.
So they're down one game. If they win the next game, then they have to win another game.
Yep.
If they lose the next game, then it's going to be a very sad Chicago.
I think it's going to be. I don't have a huge optimism about it.
Do not. Don't jinx
it. Spencer going to come down here.
I can't talk about it too much because I will be blamed for anything bad that happens. Sure. Although all the people I know who care a lot about the Cubs and would blame me for that. Also, don't listen to my podcast. So,
Actually, then maybe we should talk about it. They blame them. Yeah. If you had listened to the podcast, the Cubs would have won.
Yeah.
Sports superstitions are like the craziest superstitions out there.
They really are. Actually, it's similar to dice superstitions.
Yeah.
Right. There is dice superstition? Yep. I didn't know this. Oh, I haven't encountered it yet.
No. I roll these dice. These dice are always rolling bad numbers.
Throw these dice out. Proponent of that. Chris will tell you in our games, I have three complete sets of dice.
Oh.
And once one of them has angered me in a game, basically if it rolls poorly three times in a row, I'm like, nope. Switching to the next one. I've got white ones, green ones, and teal ones.
Oh, that's good. As you've got a rotation system going on, that's good.
Every time I create a new character, I have to buy dice that match the character in my mind because I'm a crazy person.
That's fine. No. That's totally normal. Completely normal.
Yeah. Like all of that good stuff.
But I mean, it's that kind of, I feel like sports bring out that kind of reptilian brain part of us, you know? It's, you know, you're there screaming and shouting and cursing and you're having these weird superstition-y things like having the right socks on and watch the game.
Really anything that luck is involved in, especially if you're not directly involved in it, you want to become part of it by saying, oh, if I wear these socks, I'm always going to win the game or whatever the case is. You want to feel like you can have some kind of part of it.
Yeah.
So. I also have one where if cards are dealt in a game, I try not to be the first one to pick up my cards. I don't pick up my hand first.
Oh.
I don't like doing that.
I didn't know the length of your superstition. This is good to know.
These are not.
Now I can psych you out.
You can throw me out and like, it's just going to turn into like a game, like a staring match between me and Josh. He's going to pick up our cards first next time we play something.
Just up the ante, up the tension.
Yeah, when you're talking poker, there's a lot of superstition.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yep. I never bet on the first hand. I always fold.
Really?
Yeah, which is really depressing when I get pocket aces right out of the bat. And I'm like, nope, I'm folding.
You're kidding.
I probably wouldn't fold pocket aces, but if I won hand, I'd be like, all right, I have to be done because now I've jinxed it. I didn't fold the first hand.
Right.
So
the rest of the night's just going to go downhill from there.
Oh. Yeah.
So I might win that hand, but overall, the night's going to be a bust.
Why? I still don't quite get that logic.
Hey, it's not logic.
It's a superstition.
Right, it's a superstition.
Yeah. Right.
I also don't know if you guys knew this about me, but I am, I could have a profession in Las Vegas as a cooler. I am luck ever.
What's a cooler? Oh,
The person who goes and stands at the, like a casino will hire a person to go stand at a table to be bad luck.
Oh,
I'm not sure this still happens.
Okay, maybe back in the day,
it was a thing. If somebody was like too hot at a table, like you'd send in a cooler.
Oh, wait, but hang on. This is really bad. Why do you feel... I feel bad for you. You shouldn't have this perception of yourself.
If somebody is...
I don't think this is a true thing at all. This is just... This is all psychology. I'm skeptic talking. Voice of reason.
I went to Las Vegas. The only time the people I was with won, my sister won. We weren't playing big stakes in like penny slots, but she won like $60.
Okay.
I was on the other side of the casino. The rest of the time, we just lost.
Yeah. It only takes one time for a superstition to be started.
Yeah, right.
Also, the Bears and the Cubs can't win when I'm paying attention to the game.
Spencer told me, your husband told me about this, but I think that's cruel as well. It's just one time it's happened, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because you notice the times where the bad luck thing happens, and you don't notice it when you're not causing any problems. God.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
They're all very silly, but it's fun to believe. It's fun to think that you have some sort of influence over world events. It makes you feel kind of powerful.
Right.
Especially with sports. People, I think they really identify with their teams. They want to feel like they're connected. Something they do can have an effect on their team.
Mm.
And that's where I think sports superstitions kind of get a bump up from other superstitions because... Number one, they're usually a lot easier. Like, I have to wear the right socks. I have to have my hat on. I have to sit in this seat on the couch to watch the game.
Well, maybe that's
they're usually drunk.
But also, Oh, yeah, they probably are as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, you're very susceptible to any kind of idea after a six-pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give you that. Well, I think how you break it is that you now have a funny hat or something that you wear that then negates the bad luck, okay? So next time...
Chris was at the bar when I was paying attention and reading my book. You saw it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they pay attention, they start to lose.
Again, this is confirmation bias.
Well, let's move on. Even though we are sufficiently off topic. I don't have a whole lot of games to talk about as far as new games. I do want to mention one Kickstarter game.
Right.
So if you haven't Kickstarted this game, that's worth taking a look at. We talked about Tiny Epic Galaxies a couple episodes ago as our game of today. Tiny Epic Quest is now available for Kickstarter. They've already Kickstarted made like $500,000. It's definitely funded. It's definitely going to happen.
Tiny Epic Quest.
Yep. So, and the cool thing about this is everyone's familiar, hopefully everyone's familiar with meeples, the little wooden people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they have a special kind of meeple that has little holes drilled into the hands. And when you get equipment, you plug the equipment into your little questy meeple.
That's cool.
Oh, that's
so you can carry a sword and a shield or a lantern or a bow.
I was worried they were going to get crucified or something.
No, no crucifixion. No.
But meeple stigmata.
Yeah. So you put these things on your meeple so you can see while you're playing, my meeple has a sword and a shield. And then you have the card that's sword and shield in front of you. But
That would make me so much more attached to certain meeples. I've got my sword, dude. Yeah.
Yep. I'm really looking forward to this game. I might get a few extra of those meeples because those could be used for role-playing games, like just quick throw the meeples on the board just for quick reference.
Nice.
So, and then into our game of today, which was a game that we mistitled last time. We played Oceanos.
Autocorrect.
Yes, autocorrect. Autocorrect made me say Oceanus, but made me like, that doesn't sound right. So, Oceanos.
Oceanos.
Oceanos. So, Josh, why don't you explain what this game was?
This game. Well, so I'm very self-conscious now because last time I described the game in our podcast, Chris just ripped into me straight afterwards.
It's true, that did happen.
But
I just want you to practice. Practice makes
thank
perfect.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, anyway, so the game, you have a submarine to start with. It's kind of like a player board, would you call it? And the submarine is made up of various parts that you can upgrade throughout the game. And the idea is that you draft some cards. So a few of you get dealt some cards. You have a look, and there's different things on the cards, and it's kind of a point salad type game. Kind of a, would you say it falls into the Euro style game? Not really, because there's not a thing on the outside showing the points.
I would say it's probably a Euro style game. There's no elimination.
Yeah.
Points are tracked per round. There's three rounds.
Right.
Each round has five turns, so you can kind of gather points from it, and then you tally points at the end to see who wins. It's pretty Euro style.
And because of the name, Oceanos, it's very ocean themed. So
is.
You're underwater in a submarine, and the cards that you play out are kind of, they have different ocean type things on them. So you might have coral or fishes or treasure, and there's various ways you can get points from that. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Like Kitty was saying when we were playing it, I think it was one of those games where you're kind of making your own puzzle. And there's a little bit of, do I want to give these cards over to the next person? Because once you draft a card, you are going to have to give them over to someone else. But for the most part, you are kind of building a puzzle. But it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Kitty?
I really liked it. It was kind of like a group solitaire activity almost, where, you're drafting the cards. There's a bit of strategy, what you're passing to the next player. At one point, I just needed a shark to get 2 points, and there was some strategy going on about trying not to give me sharks.
Only because you pointed it out.
I know.
You should have been more on the down low with that one.
I should have. I learned that lesson. But I did get my shark.
You did?
You did?
I had a hard time the first round. I was still learning some of the rules. So I scored 40 points that time. Then we played again right away. And not to brag, but I won by a lot
you
of did. Points.
Killed it. Yeah. You absolutely killed it.
Yeah. It was really fun. It wasn't really like anything I can think of that I've played before. It really is a unique kind of game. You're basically building an ocean. You start with 5 cards for the shallow part of the ocean for the first round. Then you build five cards of the middle of the ocean and then five cards of the bottom of the ocean. And those are the three rounds. And the way you can like connect things, you have to connect your coral to make a big coral reef. At the bottom, you want to try to place your divers because your divers go up to collect treasure.
Yeah.
And so you're looking in kind of three dimensions, or at least two.
At least two. Yeah.
But it feels three-dimensional. Yes. And it's fun. And there's actual puzzle pieces to build your submarine, and that's always fun.
Yep.
Where you're trying to guess which one you should upgrade. And
yeah. So you can collect crystals. So let's see. There's eight different kinds of fish. Mm. Four small fish, four big fish. There's coral. There's treasure chests. There are kraken symbols. Mm-hmm. So you can get attacked by the kraken if you do too many things that attract it. And then there's crystals and bases. And you can use the crystals and the base icons to upgrade your puzzle submarine. So you pull out one puzzle piece, drop in another puzzle piece. Mm. But I agree. I found it to be a lot of fun. Again, there's not a lot of player interactions. Not too much you can do to stop other people from getting what they want to get. The way the game plays to have some kind of player interaction is one person is the expedition captain. Mm. So they deal out cards to everybody else based on how many periscopes their sub has, and they don't get any cards themselves for that round. Mm. So as someone who's not the expedition captain, you have your cards to choose from. You're going to choose one, and you're going to give the rest back to the captain. And then the captain is going to choose from all of the cards given to them. Now, typically, that turns out that the captain gets a couple extra cards than they normally would, but they're the rejected cards from the other players. Mm. But since they're getting more cards, they're not necessarily not going to be able to get the shark they need, for example. Mm-hmm. But even that said, I think it's a very fun game. It plays really quick. We played two games in about an hour.
Mm-hmm. And one of those was pretty slow because we were still picking up the rules.
Yep. It's a very colorful game, easy game to score.
Mm-hmm. Really fun illustrations.
Yep. I think this would be a great game for, you know, kind of 7-8 plus. I don't know what it says on the box. I'm kind of looking over it. Nope.
I don't
have telescopic vision, so I can't see.
It's too far away.
But I think like 7-8 plus would be perfect for this
kids
kind of game.
Yeah.
Because you're really looking, it's like, how many different kind of fish do I have? Mm. Oh, you know, how big is the tail on my submarine?
It says for 8 and up.
8 and up. Yep. Mm. So highly recommended.
Definitely, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fun. All right. Well, let's go on topic, shall we?
Indeed.
All right.
In this episode, we're talking about hidden traitor games. How much can we really trust Chris? Should we just kill Chris at the start to be safe? Let's talk about why Chris is always the traitor.
Josh, that's kind of mean.
And it's almost like I wrote this, but actually, I don't think I did. It's weird.
Okay. I think ever since I gave Kitty access to the documents, weird things have been showing up.
I feel like you're showing your hidden traitor thing here. By making us both look bad.
I know, right?
What?
By writing in terrible things about yourself.
Chris. See, already making up on me. I am not the traitor.
I'm afraid you are. But it's a classic. I like the way that you've demonstrated the hidden traitor, even in these show notes.
Again, I'm being blamed for something, but fine. Let's just assume that I am the traitor.
Okay.
And I'm pointing the finger at myself.
Right. Oh, this is a very good tactic.
This is one of your strategies that you do. You do this.
Yeah.
Let's just say I am
the traitor. Now I'm going to tell you all the reasons why I wouldn't have done the things that I have already done. If I were the traitor, I wouldn't have done those things. I'm helping you.
I am just out to make this podcast as good as it can be.
Okay.
And that's all I'm going to be trying to do.
Right.
So you guys can trust me.
All right. I mean.
So Chris. I don't know. In more concrete Hidden Traitor news, what is your favorite Hidden Traitor game?
I love all Hidden Traitor games, actually, but
pick one.
I think there's two that come to mind, which are really probably the biggest ones, and two of my favorite is Dead of Winter and Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica. Both of which are, they're slightly different in like, so Battlestar Galactica, it's not a hidden traitor. It's a hidden traitor team. Mm-hmm. But even the team doesn't necessarily know who else is on their team. In Dead of Winter,
it's like a hidden roles.
It, yeah. Well, a hidden traitor is always going to have a hidden role. So any hidden traitor game implies a hidden role. Mm-hmm. But I don't consider this.
I don't know. Because I think a lot of them are more co-op with one traitor.
Right.
And usually the traitor is given a separate traitor win condition.
Yes. But everybody's given a win condition. So you all have this role card, this what your goal is. Mm-hmm. Just somebody's goal is not the same as everyone else's. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's still that hidden element in there. But I think the thing that makes a hidden traitor game different than like a standard social deduction game. So Avalon or the Resistance, where you have spies versus, you know, good guys versus bad guys, mm-hmm. red versus blue. The whole game is really about figuring out who the other guys are. Mm-hmm. Mm. With a hidden traitor game, I think the goal is more of everybody has something to accomplish. Like the group is trying to accomplish one thing. Mm. And if the group accomplishes that, the good guys win the game. Mm-hmm. Right. But the bad guys are trying to make sure the group is not accomplishing that without letting the other people know that they're against them. Mm-hmm. And they have something to have to do, some kind of hidden agenda, as Kitty mentioned, that they're aiming to do to win the game. And it could just be failing everything else if you
is
fail.
Is that Battlestar Galactica is just to stop the good guys from winning is the only mission of the Cylons? Or is there a different?
For the most part, yes. So Battlestar Galactica, your goal is to get to Earth. And you gather enough basically resources so that you can jump to your next jump point. Mm-hmm. And that jump point might get you closer to Earth. Now, everything that happens in Battlestar Galactica, let's just call that BSG, is hidden information. So if you are going to jump to the next location, I believe it's the president. I think it's the president. It might be the captain. I think it's the captain, the admiral. We'll draw two cards and choose one. One of them will say, oh, you made it one jump, or you made it three closer or whatever, but you don't know what that person drew. They drew two cards. They presumably picked the best one. But if they're a Cylon and they had the option of saying, you got one step closer to Earth or you got three steps closer to Earth, the Cylon's going to pick one and say, it was my only option.
Right.
You know, and you can't show the other cards.
How often do you end up being that role? Or are you always that one role picking the card? Or does that kind of role of picking those cards move around?
So in Battlestar Galactica, it will move around. Uh-huh. You start out as a specific role. So each you pick a character and you're going to start out that role.
Yeah.
But the president and the admiral can be switched. Uh-huh. So someone can say, I don't believe the president is good. Let's vote someone else in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or I don't believe the admiral is good. Let's put him in the brig.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone else will take over that role. So you have this kind of political nature going to try to get different people in that role.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and this one, some people, Battlestar Galactica is crazy with its hidden roles because, say you have a 5-player game.
Right.
Some of this off the top of my head, so if I don't have the numbers exactly right.
Yeah.
It's close.
We haven't played this game in a little while.
Yeah. But so you have, a 5-player game. Mm. You'll have 10 role cards and you'll shuffle up those cards and two or three of them, will be Cylon cards. Mm-hmm. And so you'll get dealt 5 of the 10 cards.
Right.
So you may see, oh, I'm a good guy. Great. Mm. Everyone's a good guy. Everyone says we're a good guy. Oh, all right. Well, maybe they were just all good guys. Mm. But halfway...
Just a point here real quick. If you don't understand some of these words we're throwing out, like jump points, Cylon, stop what you're doing and go watch Battlestar Galactica right now. It's an amazing show.
You can stop after season 2.5 if you want. But... I'd
say
recommend.
Really just watch season 1 is amazing.
Season 1's amazing.
Totally worth watching.
Yeah. So, but halfway through, another card is revealed. And that role card could make you a Cylon. Mm. So you didn't even know you were a Cylon at the beginning.
You were such a hidden traitor. You were hidden from yourself.
So you were playing as a good guy to begin with. And then one day you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm evil.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
I think I'm going to destroy it. Which
makes sense if you watch the show.
If you've watched the show.
I've seen some of the bus, but yeah, I've seen about half of the first season, yeah.
So it really captures that hidden traitor element so well.
Right.
Now, you can come out as a Cylon, and then you end up going to the Cylon ship, and there's less you can do. Mm. You're far more powerful if you don't come out as your role.
Right.
Unless everyone has already figured out you're a Cylon and just stops letting you do stuff, because that's what can happen. Yeah. So, like, basically the reason you come out as a Cylon is if everyone has used your actions to figure out, we know for sure this person is a Cylon, they are doing all sorts of Cylon-y things, let's just ostracize them.
Yep.
Then it's better for you to go to the V. Because
then you've basically got to toe this line while you are a Cylon of doing some Cylon-y things, but doing enough good things to kind of hide that you're a Cylon, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Because
it's almost good to kind of play dumb. Like, oh, I wasn't supposed to do that.
Right.
That works for me a lot.
Right.
Like,
it works for your first game or two.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally didn't understand how that worked.
Oh.
Yeah. One of the core mechanics of Babylon 5 is the voting
mechanic.
BSG.
You really love Babylon 5. I really love Babylon 5.
And they don't have a really good board game for Babylon 5. Battlestar Galactica is that, so if we're all going to decide that something happens, we have cards in our hands. And we're going to try, we need a certain amount of engineering cards or something like that. So we're all going to play cards face down into the pile. And you can talk about, oh, I'm going to play a high blue card or a low blue card, but you can't give the actual numbers.
Right.
It's kind of a fuzzy rule and it's sort of a tricky thing to enforce. But in any case, the spirit of the game is you're not saying anything that could directly tie you to that card. I'm playing a level 5 blue card.
Right.
If there is a no level 5 blue card, you've said, I've lied.
Yeah.
And if there is, you're going to say, see, I told you, I told you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not supposed to do that. But eventually, people start catching on. It's like, wait a minute. Every time you're in this vote, like, bad things happen. Right. Or there's other cards that can affect the vote. So, and there's things that will subtract from, like, your target number as well. So you're kind of trying to pay attention to who's not really doing everything they say they're doing. You said you're playing a high blue. You said you're playing a high deep blue. I know I played one. One of you is lying.
Right.
Yeah, there something's not adding up.
Yep. So that's Babylon 5.
Right.
No, it's not. It's Battlestar Galactica. Galactica.
It's almost like he's trying to ruin this podcast on purpose. Like a hidden traitor.
I just didn't know, okay? Jeez.
So your other top game was Dead of Winter?
Dead of Winter. But first, I do want to mention a game called Dark Moon. Battlestar Galactica, the board game, can be a very long game. Dark Moon is a game that was a fan created to be BSG Lite. So a faster version of the game. Doesn't have as many fiddly bits, not as many cards. So you roll dice.
Compare the two in length, roughly.
Probably half the length.
Okay.
So Dark Moon probably plays in an hour and a half or so. BSG can play close to 2.5 to 3 hours, depending on the group.
Sure.
But it uses dice instead of cards. And everything else is kind of the same. It's called Dark Moons for copyright purposes, and you're not a Cylon, you're an infected.
Right.
So, but otherwise, it's pretty much the same game. But you roll the dice behind the screen, and then you have to put the dice in front of you. It's like, okay, I'm going to be putting this dice out. And the trick to the dice are two of the sides are good, four of the sides are bad. But you're rolling a pool of dice. So really, you're going to roll a lot of negative dice.
Yeah.
So you could be a good guy and putting out negative dice all the time.
Just because that's what you're getting. But you could also be bad and hiding like four good dice behind your screen.
Right. So it speeds it up a little bit more. So if it sounds interesting, whether BSG or, you know, you just want to get that invested in it, or you don't really care about the BSG license or theme so much, you can try Dark Moon, which is another really good game that kind of
takes that. You think it plays just as well as the other one?
It plays a little different, again, because you're rolling the dice, and everyone can see what dice you're putting out in the pool.
Right.
But otherwise, and there's a different kind of different strategy to it. You're still trying to get, you're through a progression track. Mm. But if you're not trying to make that progression track happen, everyone could be sitting and doing all kinds of things that have nothing to do with actually ending the game. Right. And that can draw things out a bit as well.
Okay.
But I enjoy them both. I think they're both great.
Okay, cool.
So I think Katie should talk about Dead of Winter, though.
Well, I was going to start with the key difference between Battlestar Galactica and Dead of Winter is Battlestar Galactica, from what I recall, the Cylons' mission is just to stop the ship from reaching Earth.
Take up enough time so that the ship loses enough resources.
Yeah, runs out of steam, fails, doesn't reach the planet. In Dead of Winter, from what I recall, I've played this game once, but the traitor doesn't just have a mission of make the others fail their mission. They have their own win criteria.
Ah.
They have to collect certain resources. They have to have certain like things with them.
So,
and their win condition, I think there's a few different ones for the hidden traitors is you have this and the rest of the group hasn't met their requirements.
Mm.
And that's how the traitor wins. So the first and only time I played this game, I was playing with a bunch of people who had never played this game and one person who had.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who had played the game before was the hidden traitor, which is very, very frustrating because you're trying to get advice from someone who's played before. You would think that in a mostly cooperative game, the advice they're giving you is good.
Yeah.
But if they're the traitor, it's like kind of a difficult role for that person to play too. Yeah. Is like, do I give them real good advice on gameplay?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I further my traitor cause by giving them bad gameplay advice?
Yeah, that's a really tricky situation. And do you feel like they actually went and crossed the line into sort of almost giving you bad advice on purpose? Like, you know, almost definitely leading you down the wrong path?
I don't think she led us down the wrong path. Mm. I think she just didn't help like she could have. Mm. Like, I think she played a very good job of like, I'm someone who's not good at teaching people board games.
Right.
Because not everyone is.
Yeah.
But then I saw her teach other people how to play different board games and I was like, I got conned.
Yeah.
So we lost as a team. She won. The traitor won that round. But it is a game that I would still, even with that kind of frustrating experience, I'd play it again.
Mm.
One of the cool things about Dead of Winter is the traitor isn't always present.
Yeah, okay. You don't know.
Oh, so you're saying that it might just be a co-op game this time because no one was a traitor at all.
Yep.
You're all dealt role cards at the beginning. And I think each person has their own specific goal.
Everyone has their own specific goal.
Mm-hmm. So then there's a team goal.
And then there's a team goal. So
the team can win, but the individual can lose.
The team could win and the individual... Yes, that is correct.
Something like that.
Yep. So what happens in Dead of Winter, say you have five players.
Yep.
You'll put seven or maybe eight roll cards and shuffle them together. One of them is going to be a traitor card. So you're going to deal out the five... And you're not going to look at the other ones. They just get removed from the game.
So there's a fairly high chance that there is going to be a traitor.
Yes. There's a possibility that there's not. And the reason why I love Dead of Winter is because it truly plays as a pure co-op game.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of information is hidden from everybody else because you all have your own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We need eight fuel cards. Everyone needs to take fuel cards from their hand, and we need eight of them to pass this quest.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a personal agenda that says you need to have five fuel cards at the end of the game or you don't win, then you're like, okay, well, I really can only give one fuel card because that's all I have.
Despite the fact that you had two more you could have given.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and you're not really playing against the group because you still want to win this mission. You still want to win the game, but you're kind of pulling back resources that you might otherwise spend.
Which I think makes a lot of sense for a post-apocalypse, zombie, wasteland kind of game in winter. Is you really, like, you're part of a team. When the team does well, you do well. But also, you're really looking out for yourself.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun put yourself in the place
element to the game. Yeah, I see what you mean. That's how people would act in that post-apocalyptic situation.
It's like, you want to be part of a group. Mm. There's safety in numbers. But at the same time, you're number one. You're looking out for yourself.
Yeah.
I imagine if you took Pandemic. So just to, you know, full disclosure, Josh, you have not played many Hidden Traitor games.
No, although actually, would you say that Hong Kong Deception in Hong Kong was a Hidden Traitor game?
No.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yep, and the reason I say that is because the murder, it's all centered around, I guess, all right, my definition of a Hidden Traitor game mm-hmm. is when the game is centered around something else,
yep.
the traitor is just an element to deal with it within the game. Mm. If the game is about finding out who the traitor is, then that would be more of a social deduction game. Okay. Then you're more like the Resistance, Avalon, Werewolf,
okay.
Deception.
And so would that Secret Hitler game that you have
Secret also Hitler,
fall into the deception category?
Yes, of, that's more of a social deduction game.
Okay.
So it's not a hidden traitor because the whole point of the game is to figure out who's who.
Mm.
With Dead of Winter or Battlestar Galactica, the point of the game is to get to the end.
Yeah.
Like, we finish the mission.
Yeah.
And somebody's trying to stop us from doing that. Yeah. But collectively, publicly, we're all trying to do this other mission that doesn't have anything to do with finding the traitor.
Yep.
If we found him, it would help. But even if you knew Battlestar Galactica, if you knew who the traitor was, you may still not be able to complete the game and win the mm-hmm. game.
They can still, like, even once you know who the Cylon is, you send them off to their own ship. Mm. They get to do things to stop you.
Yep.
Right.
Or you could just not be able to, you know, roll the right dice, draw the right cards. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case is. So I think that's the big...
Yeah, yeah, I see that. Yeah, because they're still in play. We found out it was you, but we still mm-hmm. need to finish this game,
yep.
even though we know...
Although that kind of moves from a hidden traitor to a one versus many
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
situation.
Or team versus team.
Yeah. yeah.
So, but imagine pandemic,
mm-hmm.
where with pandemic, presumably you keep your cards to yourself just yep. because... You know, it's too easy for one person to run the game if they see all the cards.
Yeah.
But now imagine everybody gets a card that says, in order for you to win this game, you must have 3 red cards in your hand when the last disease is cured.
Yeah. It's certainly going to be a lot harder to cure red for everyone else then.
Yeah. And everyone has something that's a little bit, you know, saying you must have, you know, New York and Paris in your hand because... Whatever the case is,
mm-hmm.
if you put that in there, suddenly that person's still trying to cure the diseases.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They want to finish the game, but now they're just doing something a little bit fishy.
So with the two games that you just mentioned, would you say that they do a good job of balancing it? Like, is it fairly doable to win that game as the good guys? And is it also fairly possible to win as the bad guy? Like, you know, how does it stack up?
I think yes.
You think it's balanced?
I think it is actually pretty balanced.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
For both of those games?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. Now, you'd have to play a lot of them, and I'm sure there's statistics for it's sure. easier to win as the Cylons.
Sure. Now I want to look it up. Give me a minute.
Yes, can you look it up?
I'm going to be weirdly quiet, sorry.
But in general, it is the intent that if you're the hidden role, if you're the traitor role, you have just as good a chance of winning as if you were on the good guys.
Okay.
Now, there's certain things that being the traitor role, it's almost always in all of these games beneficial for no one to know you're the traitor.
Yeah.
As soon as you're outed, it becomes harder for you because the rest of the group can work against you directly.
Mm.
If you can work in with the group, though, it becomes something that's can be fairly easy
right.
to, you know, manipulate them so that you can win the game.
Right.
Sorry, I fell into Reddit.
The internet, it's always a bad thing.
So, okay. So, you think those games are balanced. So, have you actually played lots more Hidden Traitor games than just those two? And would you say would you say the genre as a whole is pretty balanced and they do a good job? Or is it hard game to get right and get balanced, and it just so happens that these two are really good?
I think the genre as a whole is pretty balanced.
Okay.
If you have a hidden traitor game where if you're the traitor, you're likely going to lose, or if you're the traitor, you're likely going to win, people aren't going to play that game.
Right.
Because then it'll
get bad reviews.
Yeah. Yeah. If you draw the ace, then you've won the game. That tends not to happen.
Yeah.
Like Betrayal on House of the Hill, we talked about that a little bit in our last episode. That one is somebody in the game is going to be turned into the traitor.
Right.
And, like, but everybody knows.
A bit like the, I was going to say Babylon 5. A bit like the Battlestar Galactica game where you don't know you're a Cylon until halfway.
Right. But what happens there, though, is when you get switched, mm-hmm. everybody knows.
Right.
And then it becomes what Kitty mentioned earlier, a one versus many type of thing. But that one versus many, that one person has just as good a chance of winning the game as everybody else.
Right.
So when that switch happens. And if that balance wasn't there, that game wouldn't be fun.
Right.
There are several threads on Reddit. I liked this title. Ooh. I think it really sums it up.
Yeah.
They don't think it's fair. The question is, simple question, how did the humans fracking win?
On Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
It is actually hard to win.
Hard to win as the humans. Not just because of the Cylons, but because of the restrictions, like what you need to have to make each jump.
Yeah. The game itself is actually a very hard game.
So okay.
It's a hard co-op game with people working against you. Like, remember we were looking, because I was looking at the pandemic statistics the other day, because I got really mad because I still cannot figure out how to reliably win without the researcher. The researcher and if you have a researcher, a scientist, a dispatcher, and a medic, you basically already won. I can win almost every time,
right.
Depending on, like, if you get a couple epidemics real close in a row, that'll mess you up. But I've really figured that out. But with some of the other roles, when you have the dispatcher or you have the quarantine specialist, I'm just like, ugh, I can't.
Is that a good thing, do we think? Like, should a game, a co-op-y type Hidden Traitor game, be kind of hard? Like, is that more fun or less fun?
I think all co-op games and anything based on the co-op idea has to be hard.
Right.
It has to be something that you're not going to win most of the time.
Right.
Well, let me rephrase that. It has to be something you're not going to win all of the time.
Yeah.
Because if you're just going to win all the time, there's no real reason to play it.
Right.
I think really what you're aiming for is a game that you'll win some of the time if you're not really good at it, and most of the time if you are good at it. But even if you're an expert at it, just because
there's just some unwinnable scenarios where the way the cards are shuffled, you got an epidemic and
followed by an epidemic and the same city got driven three times in a row. The same city
got picked three times in a row and you just hit that, like, that marker goes up so fast and there's nothing you can do about it. All of a sudden you're out of yellow pieces. Not that this happened to me two days ago.
So does the genre as a whole do a good job of that as well? Like, have you played a lot of games where you're like, oh man, this is just way too hard. Like, we should be winning more than this. Or, like, how often does that happen?
I've played several games where, now if we're just looking, and I'm just going co-op at this point, because Hidden Traitor is a subgenre of co-op games most of the time.
Yeah.
You can't really have a hidden traitor if you don't think you're all on the same team anyway.
Yeah.
So I can't think of a single hidden traitor game that doesn't present itself as a co-op game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and because of a co-op game being relatively difficult in the first place, hidden traitor games are going to have to err on the side of slightly being easier. Mm-hmm. If everyone was all on the same team, it would be slightly easier.
Yeah.
The traitor makes it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
But then the traitor, that's sort of the point, they're going to tip it to their side so that they can win.
Yeah.
Dead of Winter is a great example of this because you have to all work together to get through your mission, unless the traitor's mission is to fail the mission.
Right.
In which case, it was hard. The group wasn't able to do it because the traitor was working against them, and they're the ones that won. Although Dead of Winter is also interesting because nobody could win. There are possibilities where you have goals that everyone loses.
Right.
It was a really difficult game. I think that Dead of Winter and Battlestar Galactica, I think it's funny because you picked those two as, like, your favorite Hidden Traitor games, are the hardest to win even as a pure co-op game.
Yeah.
Even if you have voted the people off the island, figured out who the traitor is, there is no traitor. No one's drawn a traitor card yet. It's still hard to win.
Right.
Yeah.
But is that more fun? And if it is more fun, is it more fun for a certain type of person? Maybe, Chris, you really like those because you really like a challenge and you're like, oh man, yeah, this is tough to beat and God, I'm going to beat this damn thing.
I think I like the Hidden Traitors, and why I think they're more fun is because I want to like co-op games. Mm-hmm. And when you put the Hidden Traitor in there, it feels like a co-op game with something at stake. Mm. Somewhere you're playing against some human element, as opposed to just drawing cards, two epidemics in a row, drawing New York three times.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I love Pandemic.
Yeah.
Now.
We had a great time. Yeah.
But,
it's our new favorite.
Yeah. But I think that when you throw the element of a human working against you or working with the board, suddenly now there's more to it than just drawing the cards.
More nuance.
Yeah.
More unpredictability, too. Mm. Like, there's unpredictability and chance, but I think that humans really throw a wrench in the system sometimes. And it's fun because if you are not the best player, you can be not a great traitor and like almost still help the good guys.
Right.
Yep.
Like if you're not sure how to play that role. Because I think we had someone who was playing their very first game was the only traitor for the first round in Battlestar Galactica. It was the only Cylon.
Yep.
And they were just kind of,
what do I do?
Yeah. I don't know how to be a Cylon. I don't know.
And you can't then in that position ask.
No, you can't be like, hey, so I'm.
Imagine in an alternate world.
I gave myself away playing werewolf one time because I was like, wait, how does somebody know what my role is? And it was,
yeah.
And that happens sometimes.
Right, right.
Now, there are some entry-level hidden traitor games. Uh-huh. I do want to mention Black Rose, which is not a very popular game. Like it's, I don't see it in stores or anything like that.
Right.
But it is a very fun game.
Okay.
And this game plays four is the sweet spot. I think you can play 3 to 5. But
I've heard you mention this before, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is well worth playing.
Yeah, it's worth playing. Now, it's not great reviewed, to be honest.
Right.
There is a decent element of randomness to it. But basically, the way it works is you have one person who is they know who the bad guys are.
Okay.
So there's eight possible bad guys. The one person's going to choose two of those people and pull them out of the deck.
Yep.
So they're not part of the player's deck at all. Then there's three other players. I'm going to describe a four-player game. Three other players. Two of them are trying to figure out who the bad guys are, but without really worrying about, you know, they don't want them dead. They just want to find out who they are. One of them wants to kill the two bad guys. So, and then the final guy wants to get through six turns without anybody finding out who the bad guys are.
Right.
So I think it's the who's the person in charge of a religious thing that starts with rec or something?
I don't know why you're looking at me. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, anyway, the person who chooses the two bad, and these are not players, they're character cards. That person just wants six turns to go by.
Reverend?
No, it's like a recreary or something. I don't know. It's a whole universe. This particular game is in that universe.
Right, right.
But so now you have this one person, and everyone gets one bit of information on their turn.
Yeah.
And then at the end of every round, you have to try to guess, like, I think it's this person and this person.
Right.
And you know, the person running the game will be like, no, not correct. Everyone then closes their eyes and people might die and things might switch around. Again, not players, characters in the game.
Yep.
And then you go through that six rounds. And if the two good guys can decide who the bad guys are without them both being dead, they win. Otherwise, the bad guy, if he can kill the two guys, then he wins.
Right.
And the reason why there's this hidden traitor element is because that guy who's trying to kill the two, he's working against, it's a one versus mini game otherwise, right? You have this one guy is like, I know who the two bad guys are. The other three are trying to figure it out. Mm. So it's a one versus mini, except you have to deal. I'm doing a terrible job describing this game.
Well, see, I was going to ask a question not about the game.
Trying to figure out what's going on with these roles, but all I can find is some sort of horror video game of the same name.
Yes, it's based off a universe. The universe exists as a role-playing
game. We can go look it up. What was it called again?
It's called Black Rose.
Black Rose, yeah.
I was looking it up. I can't find it. This game doesn't exist. Chris is making it up. That's why it sounds like Crazy Town.
All right, Josh. He's definitely talk for 16 seconds. I'm going to go grab the game.
Right. So actually, I did have a question for Kitty. This works out quite well because I want to know if hidden traitor games are kind of less stressful to be the bad guy than pure like social deduction games.
Because in
my mind, yeah, that would be the case, and I haven't really played them. Because I'm thinking of something like Werewolf. I mean, this is the most hardcore social deduction game where you're all like looking at each other, and the whole point of the game is to talk to each other and say, I think it's you or you or you. And that is stressful when you're the bad guy.
It is.
Whereas I feel like these games kind of divert your attention away. Yes, there's a bad guy in the group, but we're kind of all doing this other thing. You know, there's game mechanics going on. We've got to win the game despite the fact that there's a traitor. So I'm assuming the pressure's off a little bit.
It is. There are actions you can take that don't seem very outright traitory most of the time.
Right.
Sometimes you really do just have to like kind of out yourself as the traitor. But I mean, Right. Even then it's not as stressful because like, yeah, everyone knows, but it doesn't really change your goal in most of the games. It's, you know,
it doesn't like necessarily eliminate you.
No,
on the game.
I don't think it eliminates you in any of the games. Right, right. I don't think they all start as hidden traitors, but just kind of end up being a one versus many towards the end.
Right,
like, you know, once you've figured it out,
I think I'd enjoy that more than social deduction because I do feel that stress when I'm the bad guy. I love social deduction when I'm the good guy, but
when you're the good guy, there's more to base your choices on of why you think someone's a bad guy. Their actions, yes. In a hidden traitor game, they are doing things that can give themselves away.
Yeah.
There's more logic than the I'm going to pick on you because I think you're a liar. You're making a smug face.
Yeah.
There's like a logic and a reason to it. I don't feel like I'm just like blindly accusing people and tossing things up in the air, see where they land, kind of a thing. There's some rules to it. It feels more civilized.
Yeah, the more structure in a game, the more it feels like a board game versus a social game.
The more Kitty likes it.
Yeah. So this game called The Black Rose.
It's Black Rose.
Esteren
game. That's what ruined Google.
And I'm going to read the overview. It's just a few sentences.
Sure.
Investigators arrive at a monastery to investigate accusations that the rector, which was the name I was looking for.
Rector? That's what I could have come up with that. You're right. You should have been looking at me. I failed you.
That the rector is responsible for a series of deaths taking place. In order for the rector to be brought to justice, the investigators must identify the rector's accomplices. Unbeknownst to the investigators, however, the spirit of one of the deceased victims haunts these hallowed halls. As they enter the monastery, the spirit possesses one of the investigators in order to exact revenge on the murderers. To save himself, the rector must either kill enough innocents to fulfill his orders from the Lord Maxnor, or delay the investigators long enough for the Blade Knights to arrive and put an end to these preposterous allegations.
This still sounds really complicated from just the description. Like people being possessed and investigators and rectors.
It boils down to this. The rector player is going to choose two of the characters in the game that are the bad guys. Mm. The investigators are going to try to figure out who those two people are. One of the investigators really doesn't want to figure out who they are. They just want to kill them outright.
Okay.
So they're trying to kill the accomplices.
Well, I'm looking forward to playing it because you did talk it up that one.
It's actually fairly quick. Normally, when we end up playing it, we play it as a 4-person game because that's really kind of the sweet spot.
Right.
It does play 3 to 5, but the 4 is ideal.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we'll play so each person has a chance to play the rector. So we'll play 4 games in a row, and usually you can get through all 4 games in under an hour and a half.
Oh wow. That's great.
It plays pretty quick.
Right.
I think some of the shortcomings of it is it's hard to get information. It feels like you're guessing. You don't really know who the traitor is.
Yeah.
And that person can really throw you off as to what you're guessing and how you're guessing. There's also the fact that if you're the rector, you're going to choose two of these characters. So if you look at the pictures, you can choose two. And then the other players can be like, well, I think Chris would have chose the two ugly guys. And, you know, it's like, oh, crap, I did choose the two ugly guys. So a lot of times when I play the rector, I'm like, I'm just randomly choosing two of the cards and I'll look afterwards. But anyway, we are approaching close on time.
There we go.
I know time flies.
Doesn't it?
Any other thoughts on hidden traitor games versus co-op games versus social deduction games? Or Josh, any other questions you have with this? Because
I'm the noob after all. No, I think you covered most of it. I really want to play them now. Like they sound like really fun games.
They are a blast.
Right.
And
And now I feel like we're making our own pandemic hidden traitor game. I don't know if you noticed we were doing that, but that's where we're heading.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, they did get
pandemic style hidden traitor.
I did get Cthulhu Pandemic, right, which is not a hidden traitor game.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, what?
But it is ripe for all kinds of fun.
Cool. I'm excited for more pandemic.
Yeah. And I will mention for this, again, it's not really hidden traitor, but Pandemic, Cthulhu Pandemic is not Pandemic. It's not just a reskin. Oh. There's a lot of new mechanics and new ways to play.
I totally thought it was just the same game.
Nope, it is different. Wow. The base mechanic is still the same. You're trying to, you know, cure four colors in Pandemic, or Cthulhu Pandemic, you're trying to close the four evil gates.
Ooh.
And you still have your four actions and moving and stuff, but it's a much smaller map. And cards, you don't have like a card for every city. There's only four cities in the game. And then there's places inside of the cities that you can move to. But if you have a particular, like you have the Arkham card and you're outside of Arkham, you can go to Arkham in any location in Arkham. If you're in Arkham and have the Arkham card, you can go to any connected city, which is two of the other three, any place in there by playing an Arkham card. But you only have the four city cards, and those will be the same cards you draw over and over. But I like it. Looks like a really cool game, pretty streamlined. But if you're looking for Pandemic proper, it isn't that. So, but if you just want a little bit of a Cthulhu Halloween fun, we are recording on Halloween after all.
Yes.
No scary stories in this one. yeah, it's a good game to try out.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm excited to try that one, and I'm excited to get back to our Pandemic Legacy game. We need to move forward in that.
Yes, as soon as
I want to tear up more cards.
Yeah.
Yep. My crazy traveling schedule ends.
Open some boxes
next weekend, so we can start getting back on that bandwagon. I know. All right. Well, I think that is everything. So, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Sure. Well, as always, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris. And Kitty is at Kitten L. Of course, you can always leave us a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or our BoardGameGeek.com pages. We'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we're talking about gaming conventions, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.